the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals. And with me in our second show of the week and our first preview show of maybe two, I don't know if we'll have a second one this week, is Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com and one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. We're episode 504, and this is our preview predictions and pop bet show, but we added another P and it's Pro Bowl. So we're going to talk Pro Bowl, previewing the Seahawks game, making our picks and predictions, and we'll talk some prop bets as well, Seth, as we go into the final weekend of the season. We now know the Pro Bowl, with the Pro Bowl members. The Cardinals was mildly surprised. I'm not surprised, but I am surprised. The Cardinals get one Pro Bowler, and that's safety Buda Baker, fifth season in a row as a starting safety, sixth time in his career. And nobody else was even an alternate. Now, how surprised were you that there were no alternates? How surprised were you that Buda made it this year in a year which he missed four games? And statistically, he's been eh.
I think he even missed five games total. But yeah, I mean, it's interesting that he made the Pro Bowl, not just made, but as a starter, which means players and coaches, because I think it's a third, right?
Yeah, thing. And he did not crack the top 10 in previous years, he's been a top 10 vote getter at safety. This year was not, he did not crack the top 10. And so this was all about the cachet of respect that he has from players and coaches.
Yeah, and so, like, that's a huge thing. Yeah, he did miss five games, too, which is crazy to even think about that. But he, you know, he missed five games, but he's got so much respect from the coaches and players that to earn a starting means that he was the majority guy on those things, right? And so, especially when you're not even top 10 in the voting, and we're already seeing the cries, you know, Antoine Winfield Jr. has had a better year. And I think, I mean, if we're going to be completely honest and transparent, he did have a better year.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
There's nothing wrong with saying that, but, you know, Buda's developed enough or you know, acquired enough cachet in the league that it's fine. Like, this is, and you have so eloquently talked about this for years that eventually it stops being about what you did and more about who you are.
Oh, totally.
And that's where Buda is at this point. Like, it's not, I don't want anybody to think that we said Buda played poorly or didn't deserve, No. But like, look at this. And again, this is one player that he made it over. Antoine Winfield Jr. has played every game this season. He has three interceptions, 12 passes defensed, five forced fumbles, four fumbles recovered, five sacks, 117 total tackles, 73 solo, 44 assisted, and five tackles for loss.
Well, even look at Jalen Thompson, who you could argue that Jalen Thompson's had the better season between he and Buda, and that's unless you come in as a highly, highly touted player in the league, usually unless you are fantastic as a rookie, or if you it takes any time for you to develop. And this is an old adage in the NFL when it comes to Pro Bowls. You usually aren't a Pro Bowler the first time you deserve it. And you're usually there for one more than you should. Is usually how that goes. Now, I don't want to say that age 27, almost 28 years old, that
he's not past his prime at all. Just, you know, you just look at the amount of games played to only play 12 games this year, to be on the worst defense in the NFL.
Right. And he's got 77 tackles, which is second on the team, 5 tackles for loss, but he hasn't gotten his hand on a pass. He hasn't created any turnovers, hasn't had an interception. And so statistically, he's been very, very, you know, for lack of a better way for kids to, that the young people know, he's been pretty mid in terms of statistics. That's not to say about his impact, his importance to the team, but this year, it is a legacy Pro Bowl selection, and there's nothing wrong with that because that always happens. If you look up and down the rosters of the Pro Bowl rosters, you're going to see some guys that are like that. When Chris Lindstrom, who's a fantastic player, is Chris Lindstrom still one of the best guards in the NFC? I don't know at his age.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, it's just, it stinks that that's what it comes down to, but at the same time, you're not going to take anything away from a guy like Buddha. He deserves it. He's a fantastic player, and he's, you know, he works very hard to be where he's at. I mean, you look at it this year, like you said, you've got a great mix of everything. I mean, you know, you've got young guys, you've got older guys, you've got, like you said, you've got guys that probably deserve it, probably that don't deserve it. It goes back to what we said, though, right? A couple weeks ago. Wouldn't you have liked to have made that trade for Montez Sweat, Pro Bowler Montez Sweat now at this point?
Right.
Like to see what he's done this year. But, you know, and Buddha is not the only guy that is probably close to a legacy pick. He's probably the most.
Well, it's interesting because you know how Buddha got the recognition early? It's when he made one. I think one of the things that was helpful was being a special teamer, special teams Pro Bowler his rookie season, because then players knew who he was.
Right. But, I mean, this is people may not even agree with me on this, but like you look at a guy like Aaron Donald, one of the best players in the history of the NFL. This season, his own teammate, rookie Kobe Turner's, probably had a better year than him. And he's not even an alternate. Like he's the same type of thing. Like, and so now Aaron's played a more impactful season than Buddha. So I don't want to take anything away from Aaron, but like those are the type of things that happen, you know? And so guys like Aaron Donald next year will probably still be in it. Right. Is Bobby Wagner one of the best inside linebackers in the NFL when you're talking about something that we'll get to shortly, having, you know, playing for one of the worst run defenses in the NFL? Probably not. But I mean, and we don't have anything to like compare it to, right? Because we don't have an inside linebacker that we would want. But like, I'm sure there are some teams that would be like, or some fans that would be like, oh, I can't believe, you know, this guy didn't make it, or this guy, you know, TJ Edwards of I know the Bears were kind of upset he didn't make it.
And Edwards has had a fantastic season,
and you know, things like that. And so, you know, it's, I don't take anything away from Buddha.
Right.
You know,
and then you look at, were there snubs? And because we work with the internet, you have to write about snubs for your team, even if no one was probably snubbed. I cannot say, I'm like, I wrote about two players. I think you maybe could make an argument for three players that could have probably, and I wrote it for this point of view, on Thursday, was snubbed as alternates, because there's no way you could have put this. Like Trey McBride is one of them. Now, impact that he's had over the last eight, nine games, I broke it down. You know, he has 63 catches in his last 9 games, and if you extrapolated his last 9 game production over an entire season, he would have 119 catches for over 1,100 yards. That's insane. One, and it probably wouldn't happen, but you can't honestly, there's no one who could honestly say yes, Trey McBride deserved a Pro Bowl berth over George Kittle, who is back over 1,000 yards receiving this year for the first year in a few. Kittle, who is, you know, still one of the five best tight ends in the NFL in terms of both, and one of the best all-around ones because he is a fierce blocker and incredibly productive in the pass game. Or Sam LaPorta, the rookie in Detroit, who's got, you know, 80-plus catches, almost 900 yards, and 9 touchdowns. You know, McBride was the only player on the Cardinals to crack the top 10 in fan voting. And for those who don't know about fan voting, we know it comes down to two things. There are literally two things that matter for fan voting. Team popularity and fantasy production. And because of the last 2 months, McBride's getting attention because of his fantasy production. You can't really criticize that, because that's how fans are going to know about players from other teams. You either vote for your team's players, and then the more popular teams, the teams that are more popular nationwide or having a great season will get those votes, or two, they're players that get recognition for fantasy numbers. James Conner, a couple years ago when he went to the Pro Bowl, he was not one of the best running backs in the NFL, but however, the 20 touchdowns that he scored got a lot of attention. When you score a lot of touchdowns, that gets players' attention, that gets coaches' attention, and it definitely gets the fans' attention because he was a fantasy superstar. And so Trey McBride's not quite there. And I, you know, Matt Prater probably deserved alternate status, in my opinion. There's a lot of other good kickers, but you definitely couldn't put him in over Brandon Aubrey, who's been perfect on 35 field goal attempts this year for the Cowboys in the mix of it there. And so, and then maybe Connor. Connor, who's threatening. Like, he could crack 1,000 yards this year. He was 110 yards away from 1,000 yards on the season. And you could say, that he maybe could be an alternate. But if you look at his, you know, week-by-week numbers, it's been inconsistent. He's been hurt. And so we get it. Because he hasn't had the monster fantasy production, he just wasn't going to get the same thing. So I'd say those three deserve recognition. And a player to watch moving forward would be Paris Johnson, because he's a top 10 pick. I told you on the last show that his teammates call him All-Pro P. I would imagine in the next year or two, if he continues, that because he already comes in with that cachet of expectation, we could see him reach that level. But other than that, I mean, look at this team. Nobody else is a Pro Bowler.
I still think Prater should have been. I get why Brandon Aubrey, just from a pure, like you said, fantasy points perspective. And he did a nice job kicking long distance as well this year, but I just thought that what Prater did this year in the situation he was in was so impressive. But, you know, Aubrey was 35 from 35 from field goals. Like, he didn't miss a field goal all season. So it's tough. I get that portion of it. And like you said, maybe James Conner. But, I mean, you look at the running backs, right? I mean,
like, who are you, like Christian McBride? No, I mean Christian McCaffrey. There's no way he's far and above. Like, he's the best running back in football this year.
Right. And so then you look at it and you've got the reality that maybe one of these guys, you know, is a late ad alternate, right? That still happens every once in a while, but probably not from this group of things. So we'll see how it all kind of works out and everything. But it was a bit of a surprise when I got the email, because it came about, what, like 6 o'clock last night or whatever
it was.
And I kind of just didn't even open it because I didn't expect anything. And then I was like, wait, did that say Pro Bowl like on the header? And so I went back and looked and I was like, oh my gosh, it does say Pro Bowl. Like, what is going on? So that was where my head was. Like, I typically have pre-writes for it, and I quite frankly didn't even pre-write it because I was like, they're not getting a Pro Bowler this year.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Coming to next one on the Rise Up Seahawks podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on and look ahead to week 18. The Cardinals take on the Seahawks. We'll preview the Seahawks as a team. That's coming to next on Rise Up Seahawks. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. We play the Seattle Seahawks this Sunday afternoon at State Farm Stadium, 2:25 p.m. Arizona time. And this is an interesting thing because the Seahawks, the last time we saw them, they were 3-2. They won the game. They were 4-2. And it was a very interesting game because the Seahawks turned the ball over three times. The Cardinals won the turnover battle, but lost 20-10. And it was a rough game. We talked about in that show, leading up to that show, just how great their run defense was. And I went to look and see if that was still the case, and here we go. And they are, in yards per game, they are now third worst team. They allow the third most rushing yards per game, 134.1. The Cardinals, of course, allow the most rushing yards per game at 143.5. But even so, yards can be deceiving. You look at the yards per carry. They are 4.5 yards a carry that they're allowing, which puts them 32, 31, 30, 29, 28, 27, 26, 25th in the NFL when they were a top 10 team or a top 5 team when they entering week 7 earlier this season. They're just coming off a game in which Pittsburgh ran all over them. They're over 200 rushing yards against them. And you look at their team, they've, over the last four games, offense has been not great. Now, granted, they are 2-5 in their last seven games. They are on the brink. They are the number 8 seed right now. To make the postseason, they need to beat the Cardinals, and they need the Bears to beat the Packers, which I think is a possibility the way the Bears are playing. That said, this is a winnable game, and we'll talk more about that in the preview part as we talk about keys and things like that. But their defense. Look at the last several weeks of now. They've got two games. They only allowed 17 points to the Eagles. They looked great. They only allowed 17 points to the Titans, but the Titans don't score points. But since in that 7-game stretch, they lost 17-16 to the Rams. They gave up 31 to the 49ers, which is understandable. They gave up 41 to the Cowboys, also understandable. They gave up 28 to the 49ers, also understandable. But they gave up 30 to the Eagles, to the Steelers. And if you're giving up 30 to the Steelers, something's wrong, because we know the Steelers are bad, although Mason Rudolph has added a little bit of a spark. So this defense is suddenly, while there's it can be good, is not the same good that it was.
No, and you look at it, it's kind of crazy to look at, but you broke down some of it. I've kind of looked at the last 9 games for the Seahawks. So at one point this season, this team was sitting at 5-2. And the last 9 games, they're 3-6. They're averaging less than 20 points a game, 19.4. And they're giving up over 27 points per game. So it's kind of a historically bad fall if you look at it. I mean, their wins, the only impressive win was that game over Philadelphia where they beat them 20-17.
And we know Philly's a fraud right now.
Yeah.
Sorry, guys.
And so you look at it. And in their other wins, they beat Washington 29-26, barely beat Washington. They beat the Eagles, like I said, 2017, and then they beat the Titans 2017. Their three wins are a combined 9 points. They're giving up almost 400 yards per game. They're barely getting over 300 yards per game on offense. And then, like we talked about, their vaunted run defense that was number 1 in yards per game and 5th in yards per attempt is now 30th in yards allowed, 30th and 25th in yards per attempt. Those are just baffling, insane numbers to see that go. Cause I mean, they play the Cardinals week 7. So it was week 6 that we looked at those numbers and we were like, this is a really good run defense. And you got to remember too, the Cardinals even ran the ball well against them in that game. I mean, I think the Cardinals ran for, you know, you, and that was without, that was out without Connor too. And they had, you know, DeMarcado had 58 yards. Josh Dobbs had 43 yards. Rondell Moore had 24 yards. So like they did a nice job running the ball against this team the last time they played them. And now you're talking about a team with Kyler Murray, with obviously James Conner back healthy, with Michael Carter added into the fold. And now you're just seeing a different type of running game and an offensive line that seems like it's found its groove in run blocking. So it's going to be really interesting because it's just such a change from what we saw overall. And I talked with John Gilbert of Field Goals, and you know, it's interesting because I feel like they're in a as fans, they're in a spot where they kind of can't complain because they've had it so good for so long, and they understand that this is kind of the last hurrah of Pete Carroll. And so you don't necessarily want to push him out. So you're kind of letting or allowing him to finish on his own terms. And at the same time, it's kind of setting back this franchise, right, a little bit. Like, not in the sense of like, oh, they're never going to be good again, but in the sense of like, hey, this isn't, you know, this team isn't going to be as good as they potentially could be. And so that's what's really interesting to kind of look at and see, because overall there just seems to be a lot of disconnect with everything. I mean, again, this is a team that is struggling kind of in every facet of the game, despite having guys like DK Metcalf, despite having guys like Kenneth Walker. I mean, they're still having decent seasons, but you look at it, they're really, really, and I mean really bad along the offensive line. They've had just an absurd, devastating amount of injuries that they've had to deal with this season. And then defensively, it's been a combination of injuries and change in scheme and other teams getting enough film on their scheme and adapting to what they were doing. And I don't think we ever really expected to see that in a Pete Carroll led team.
No, but even still, this is a defense that has three Pro Bowlers, right? You've got Bobby Wagner, you got Devon Witherspoon, and then you've got Julian Love. And so they still have talent there. I guess if you're going to look at their money stat is, if you look at their last, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So we'll go back since their 5-2 start. So we look back at those 9 games. It comes down to this. They don't turn the ball over, they win. They have 3 wins in the 3 games that they haven't turned the ball over. And then the other 6 games, they turned the ball over. Their defense has been okay at creating turnovers. They haven't created one in the last 2 weeks and in 3 of the last 5. But it really comes down to, are they giving, because they've struggled kind of offensively and their defense isn't as good. So if they turn the ball over, giving the opponent an extra possession, that's more than they can overtake. That's more than they can overcome. Like, even with their struggles offensively, because they haven't scored more than 23 points. In fact, it's been 16, 20, 20, 23 over the last month. And then before that, they had the 35 against the Cowboys. It was 13. It was 16. So they're, you know, they have a one game of 35 points in their last 6 games. That is really kind of skewing their numbers. You know, after the 5-2 start, they did 3. They had 29, but then it was 16, 13, 35, 16, 20, 20, 23. If that's the offensive production that they're getting, they're turning the ball over, that's going to be really hard to overcome. But at the same time, you look at those numbers and you can see, oh, they're like against Washington, they rolled up nearly 500 yards of offense. They had over 400 yards of offense against the Cowboys. They approached 400 yards against the Steelers. And so that's a team that can still move the ball, which, you know, the Cardinals struggle. And so, you know, as we look at the keys, if the Cardinals do what they did against Philly, that's one thing. If they aren't able to control the ball, then it's going to be a different story. But yeah, if the Cardinals can create a turnover, then that's kind of the money stat. In three games where they don't turn the ball over, three wins. In the last six games where they turned the ball over, they lost six times.
Well, and it's interesting because they don't turn the ball over a lot. You know, they're fifth in turnovers on the season with only 17, which is, you know, a very minuscule number. But they don't cause a lot of turnovers, right? 19 on the season. And then the fact that, like you said, they're starting to struggle in a lot of facets of the game. You know, they're really not a good third down defense. When you look at it, they're 31st ranked third down defense, which is not good. The last I checked, they give up more first downs than anybody in the league, which is again a baffling stat, right? Like, how do you give up? How do you have three Pro Bowlers and give up the most first downs in the league? You know, they don't force interceptions. That was something that that John talked about. You know, I asked, you know, because it's the end of the season and maybe not for them, but for the Cardinals. And so one of the questions I asked, who was a big surprise, who was a big disappointment this season? And one of the big disappointments is Reek Woolen, a guy that, you know, I loved last year. We talked about earlier this year when they played him. You know, this was a guy that was a Pro Bowler last year as a rookie. And this year he's just kind of been, I don't want to say bad because that's overstating it, but he hasn't been what you would expect in year two, especially adding a guy in Devin Witherspoon who's a Pro Bowler this year, right? Like, you would expect him to take that next step. and so that's, you know, that's been an issue for them. You know, you mentioned it, Julian Love, their safety is a Pro Bowler. He has four interceptions that leads the team. And then you look at it, you know, they don't have a double-digit sack guy. Boy Mafi might get there this year, but, you know, Jaron Reed's only got seven, and he's number two. And then from there, they've got a bunch of guys that have, you know, four and a half sacks on the season. They traded for Leonard Williams. He hasn't really, you know, he's been impactful, but he hasn't really lived. I mean, you think about that trade happened, and they've kind of nosedived since that situation, right? So, you know, you have those issues, but then you have the reality of that, you know, they're spending a ton of money on a guy like Jamal Adams, who's played nine games this year. You know, they're spending a ton of money on Geno Smith, who's missed games this year and hasn't been as effective as he was last year. Who, you know, and he's been kind of the definition of an average quarterback. And so you look at it from that perspective, and it kind of makes sense that they're in this position, when nothing's kind of going right. I mean, you know, you look at it, Kenneth Walker last year was a guy that it looked like he was just going to take the league by storm, right? I mean, this is a guy that came in 15 games, ran for over 1,000 yards, nine touchdowns, over 4.5 yards per carry. And then this year he's barely scraping over 4 yards per carry. And he's a good running back. I mean, we're not taking anything away from Kenneth Walker. We think he's a fantastic running back, but like, it just goes to show how much plays into the overall success of a team. And when you've had, and again, I don't do a lot of fact checking in these things because I, quite frankly, like, I trust them to tell me what's going on. But, you know, they've told me, or that John told me, that, you know, both starting tackles, both starting guards, and the starting center have all been out at different times this year. That, I mean, we've seen that with the Cardinals. It's one of the things that, you know, when injuries happen, whether it's along the defensive front line or the offensive line, it makes it really difficult to be successful. And you know, you don't want to make excuses for a team, but it just does seem like even if Seattle is able to win this game and sneak into the playoffs, it doesn't seem like they're built for any success in the playoffs based on what we've seen over the last 9 weeks.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Sierra podcast, Best Serve Cardinals Talk on the web. Let's move forward to talk about keys and matchups. That's what we're doing next. Coming up next on Rise Up Sierra. We're back on the Rise Up Sierra podcast, Best Serve Cardinals Talk on the web. Let's look ahead now to the matchup. And I think is if we talk about keys, one, create turnovers. Two, the blueprint that they did against Philadelphia, that will also work against Seattle, because the Seahawks do not stop the run well. If the Cardinals can run the ball and stay on schedule and keep the ball away from Seattle to where the Cardinals defense doesn't have to be on the field for long, because guess what? We know the Cardinals defense is bad, and that's fine. That's what you get on an under-talented team that's missing players due to injury. And so if they can do that, if they can be as efficient as they were last week, and they were efficient, and they sputtered in the first half on those first three possessions. And so, like, this is a game where if they don't punt, I think they'll probably win the game. But yeah, they're kind of the same. If the same vibes, if their vibes, their offensive vibes are the same as they were last week, they can mess around and win this game, which, you know, that's a little bit worrisome. But it's exciting, but then you're like, but the draft.
Yeah, and that's where you're at this point, is you're looking at it and you go, you know, what's the right answer? Where do you get to? You know, things like that. And you know, it just seems like this team is in a good space where it's more important for them to have success, or, you know, to feel that success and continue to build that momentum forward, than it is to be like, oh, well, you know, they're going to miss out on Marvin Harrison Jr. And so I think that's where you're at this point. Like, it would have been different if they were sitting at two wins, right? Like, you look at it and you go, hey, they won that first game, Kyler's back, and then they've, you know, they're 1-6 now, and it is what it is. Like, we're off to next year, and now we can debate the quarterback situation and blah, blah, blah. But I think with how it's played out, you're kind of like, all right, is this team good enough to game plan and scheme up a win against a superior team? I mean, while Philadelphia and Seattle are not, you know, what they were last year by any stretch of the imagination, they're still a superior team to the Arizona Cardinals, right? So the exciting thing is if you end up being the better coach team, right? And when was the last time you could look and be like, oh yeah, the Arizona Cardinals are better coached than the Seattle Seahawks? I mean, it's been at least since BA was here, right?
Yeah. And even then, you know, Pete Carroll was doing his thing. So Bruce Arians, it's been a while. It's been a while.
And so you look at this game, you know, saying it comes down to the run game is simple. It really is, but that's what this team is kind of done well and created as its identity, and wouldn't it be cool to see James Conner get over 1,000 yards on this season when he missed four games, you know, on a team that struggled so mightily throughout the season with just different aspects of everything, you know? And then to see Kyler get, you know, and I know it's not a lot, but like, to see Kyler get to like 10 or 11 touchdown passes on the season, God forbid 12, right? Like, and you know, he's averaging 1.5 touchdown passes per game. Then you're like, okay, that's 28 touchdowns on the season. That's, you know, I think he's at 3 or 4 rushing, you know? So you're like, oh, you're talking about a 35 touchdown season and things like that. Like, you know, it's just one of those situations where I think you have to be excited about what there the possibilities are and what you could potentially see. And the way that this team comes out and competes is going to be really interesting to me, because at the end of the day, that's kind of all we ask for, right? Is that they come out and compete. And if they come out with another fantastic game plan, and by the way, the reality of them doing what they did to the Seahawks is probably pretty slim, right? Like the way that they all controlled that game was something I haven't seen before. I don't know about you, but like, I genuinely don't remember the last time I saw a team have a 40 to 20 time of possession.
No, that's crazy.
And so, you know, if that happens again, I mean, if that happens again, you're going to have to like tie Jess and I down heading into next year, because we're going to be like, this team is really freaking good. Like, yeah, this team has a chance, because like that just doesn't, I mean, it genuinely, a 2-1 time of possession thing just doesn't happen in the NFL. It's just not something that occurs. And so if it happens, you know, back-to-back weeks in, let's be honest, must-win games for the opponents, like, the only thing we're going to say negative about Jonathan Gannon is, like, why didn't you figure this out earlier in the season, right? Like, why didn't this be one of the things you did earlier in the season? So, you know, I think the game plan's there for the taking. I mean, yeah. I truly don't know if Seattle can stop Arizona on offense, but we all know what the flip side of that is too.
Right. And I'm going to point to one thing. The Cardinals have been absolutely awful against NFC West running backs. I wrote about it a couple of weeks ago after Christian McCaffrey went off on them again. Ken Walker has had the worst game of all the NFC West running backs against the Cardinals, and that was a 105-yard performance. And if that's the worst that you're doing, that's bad. That's bad for the Cardinals. The running backs have averaged more than 160 scrimmage yards per game in their five division games and two touchdowns a game. So Ken Walker becomes kind of the focal point, because if he gets going, we know that the Cardinals will give up point. Like if he goes off at all, then you're going to see DK Metcalf. Then you're going to see Jaxon Smith-Njigba seeing big plays in the pass game, because we've seen the porous pass defense that the Cardinals are getting. And it looks like, and I haven't seen the injury report yet today, but I'm guessing, did Garrett Williams not practice again today? I'm guessing that was the case, and we're probably looking at no Garrett Williams for the finale, which means Jalen Thompson in the slot. And as much as we like Jalen Thompson, he can play in the slot. The Cardinals are not good as a defense when he's there.
No, they're not. And it's just it's an unfortunate thing. I don't see today's injury report yet. Darren Urban hasn't posted it.
That means because now they're now an hour behind us right now.
Yeah.
So it's coming probably within the hour.
So yeah, and so we'll see, but there's gonna be issues, I mean, on this defense until they add more bodies, and obviously quality bodies is the first part, but the reality is they just lack bodies in general. I mean, you and I've talked about it. I've just genuinely never seen a team be down their top five defensive linemen in a season. Like, it's just and I know Lecky could be back this week, but like, that's just a baffling situation to even kind of think about.
Anything else in terms of any matchups that we want to look at for this game? Or are we basically just looking at the offense versus Seattle's defense and just hoping that they control the ball? Because if Seattle gets the ball, they're probably going to move the ball on the, because let's be honest, the 20 minutes that Philly had the ball, they still scored points. They scored 24 points in 20 minutes and then
They had 275 yards of offense in 20 minutes.
Then on top of that, they had the defensive score. So there was still 24 offensive points in 20 minutes of game time.
Ugh. Right. And that's what's crazy about that whole situation. And you kind of hit it, right? Like, you look at the number of of plays they ran and how many yards they had per play. And it wasn't like the Cardinals were doing anything productive to stop them. I mean, they averaged 6.5 yards per play.
Honestly, it came down to basically two possessions. It came down to the very first possession and the very last possession. They forced the punt on the first possession, and they had the they got Jalen Hurts. They read the power run play that Hurts was doing. They set him up for that negative play, and that set up the field goal. And that was basically the difference in the game.
Right, which is insane to think about because, like, yeah, 4 or 6.5 yards per play. The crazier thing is that the Cardinals averaged 7 yards per play. So
they were so good. They were so good. So, yeah, that were kind of – so how much can they keep – the Cardinals can keep the Seahawks offense off the field? Because we know that the defense is probably not stopping them. Probably not, you know.
Right, and that's what makes it tough because, like, You can look at the matchups and you can look at everything, but the reality just is that there's just not, I mean, especially for the Cardinals, there's just not a lot to go off of. Like, there's not a lot of matchups that you look at and you go, hey, they have an advantage here, because they just haven't been at an advantage, especially on the defensive side of the ball, probably for the whole season outside of the Dallas game where they just played out of their mind. But like I said, when you're down your top five defensive linemen and both of your starting inside linebackers, like, that's just the fact that they're competing. And I know it's not pretty, but the fact that they're competing tells me all I need to know about Jonathan Gannon heading into year two.
Yeah, and that's exciting. That's super exciting. Coming up next on the Res Ups Europe podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the web. Let's talk about our final segment, which would be our picks and our prop bets. That's coming up next on Res Ups Europe. We're back on the Res Ups Europe podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the web, wrapping things up on your favorite segment of the show where we make our predictions. We talk about the best prop bets to make. Sorry on the DeAndre Swift props for last week. Sorry about that.
That wasn't our fault. We were on the right train of thought.
But who knew? How in the world were we supposed to predict that the Cardinals were going to have the ball for 40 minutes? And the truth is, he still almost hit that over. had one more possession.
He averaged 4.7 yards per carry. His over-under was 15.5 carries, and he only got 13 carries. Like, that's a baffling, baffling thing, man. Like,
so hitting the over, alternate over of 50, that was a good one to cash in on. That went well. Actually, my props all went very well because I laddered a couple. I laddered the over and the over the alternate line of 50. That went well for me. I wish... I would have done a little bit more. I laddered Connor's over with 60 plus, and because I got even odds on that, I got plus 100, plus 110. And I didn't want to get greedy, but dude, you'd have cashed in. If you'd have gone all the way up to plus 100, you would have cashed in. And yeah, last one was a really good weekend. And I just had the one stinker for the underdog pick and you know, Jacksonville shut out the Panthers, but the Raiders did their thing. I went 2-1, so I'm back on the winning side of things there. But let's look at the props that we have this week. We actually have on a Thursday afternoon some player props, which is kind of weird. It's kind of rare. But we don't have anything on Ken Walker. But I'm going to be super interested where they set the Ken Walker one at, because, you know,
well, their offensive line is just so bad, man.
But
like, so beat up.
But if we look at what the Cardinals have done against the NFC West running backs, I still think it's not a bad play to wherever it is. Take the over and ladder it all the way to 100 yards. Even though their offensive line is bad, it's just going to be a matter of how much they're on the field and how healthy Walker is. Because if he's available, the Cardinals have not stopped. They have not stopped an NFC West running back this season.
Yeah, and I would mimic anything that Connor's getting right now. So on DraftKings, he's at 69.5. I would mimic anything that if Kenneth Walker's in the same vicinity, I would mimic that. So 69.5, 80, 90, 100, you know, and if you're feeling froggy, go up to 110. So you bet the 1,000-yard season for Connor. That's up to plus 360.
Nice.
I like his ladder this week. We explained why earlier. If you need to rehash that, go back to the beginning of the show.
Seattle's rush run defense is bad. It's bad, and too bad, like, at least on BetMGM, they don't have anything for Michael Carter, because if they're staying on the field, and the great thing about this week, this last week, is that the reason why Michael Carter got so much more, get the touches that he did, is because they were on the field so much. You know, James Conner got his touches, and they weren't in the passing downs, which meant that allowed Carter to come in, because it's always DeMarcado in the pass downs. And they don't have anything on him. Otherwise, I'd be interested in that. Now, we look at, okay, take this one. James Conner, longest rush, over 16.5. I believe he's had one each of his last three games. Yeah, do that. Do that. Take that. He's not only been steady, he's been explosive. And the Seattle defense is not good, so let's do that.
The other one for the Cardinals that I like is Greg Dortch's over. He's at 35.5. Seems low based on what he's done this year.
And BetMGM is 34.5. So if you want an extra.
Oh, sorry. That is correct. I had it wrong. So 34.5. I was looking at Michael Wilson's 36.5,
yeah.
Which is, isn't that weird that he's more? Have they not been paying attention to the games? I don't know.
Well, and Dortch played really, really well. And that's something to talk about over then. But, yeah.
But, I mean, yeah, the last two games he's over that number. You can do a small ladder if you want to 50. If you're feeling froggy, that's plus 200.
Yeah.
You know, he was at 45 the week before on only two catches. And then obviously 82 last week. I wouldn't go crazy. I wouldn't take him up to 80 again. Like that's just asking to lose money on stuff like that. But
Trey McBride's 55.5. I like.
Yeah. Cause he missed it just last week at 45. I want to say, right. He had 45 last game, 40 something. So, just a smidge short, 48. So yeah, he was real close last week. And again, this is a much worse defense, in terms of statistics of what we've seen over the last couple of weeks. I would, any of the big three receivers for the Seahawks, I would take their over. DK's 68.5. Jackson Smith and Jigba's 44.5. Tyler Lockett's 51.5. They haven't had great years, but like we talked about the Cardinals pass defense, like the only chance the Cardinals have is to keep away the ball. So like, and so if you're betting that happens, then don't play it. But again, I've never seen anything like last week before. Like I've watched a lot of football in my life. I've never seen anything like that before. Matt Prater's plus 110 for over 1.5 fills made. You know me, I fire on that every single week if I can. I like that one. So,
oh, Gene, let's do it again. You got plus odds on Kyler and yep, over 1.5 touchdown passes at plus 120. I like it. I think he's hit a groove. The offense has hit a groove and he's getting guys open. So Michael Wilson, I was real happy for Michael Wilson because it looked like he'd turned into a bad player, but then to bounce back the way he did, you know, I and if you want to go with an anytime touchdown score, Michael Wilson gives you plus 230 odds. That's real juicy there.
Yeah, and I like that plus 124 on DraftKings. So slight, I think you said plus 120 for yours. So slightly better odds, but you know at that rate it really doesn't matter. Play whatever the book is you play. You mentioned Michael Wilson, anytime touchdown, plus 250. Another one I like in this one is I do like Trey McBride as first touchdown score. It's plus 1,100. It's a bit of a long shot, but
if you want that one, BetMGM's a little bit better at plus 1,400.
Okay, yeah, so even better. But the way that they've the way that their first series have gone, it, you know, obviously you need the Cardinals to receive the ball, because if they don't receive the ball, it's probably going to be Seattle that scores first. But the way that their first, their scripted series have gone have just been so crazy productive and good that, you know, it's typically it's James Conner, and it probably will be James Conner, and his number's not bad on DraftKings at plus 600, but I like the little bit longer odds on a small bet on that to make a little bit of extra money on those. I actually play those every single week. They're just fun bets to start the game off with, kind of just, and it's typically, like I said, it's typically James Conner, but you know, it never hurts to try something different. Nope. You mentioned earlier the ladders that we ran last week and how much those worked out. This week you've got a couple interesting ones that I wanted to throw at you. The first one, both teams to score plus or 25 plus points is plus 300. Ooh. And both teams to score 30 plus points is plus 700.
Ooh.
That's
close, because I don't quite predict that for my final score, but that wouldn't be a bad way to go. Let me pull up the alternate line, the alternate total, that is, and let me see if we can give you a little value number there. Dun, 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 dun. No, wait, that's, where's, I'm looking at totals, full game.
They kind of tanked it this week. It's 52s on this one's only plus 146, 52 and a half plus 152, which
okay,
isn't.
So I do like that, because at least at over 50 is still plus odds at plus 105. That's not crazy, but I like it.
No.
I like it better than the standard minus 110 at 48.
But they definitely tanked the odds this week, knowing that the Cardinals can't stop anybody.
Well, we cashed that in last week. Final score predictions.
Right.
What do you think it's going to be? I'll give you mine in a second. But how do you think this game's going to play out?
Man, this is a tough one. I really want to take the Cardinals to win this one. But every time I trust the Cardinals to win, they remind me that they're not a very good team. So I don't know if it's reverse jinx or whatever, but I'm going to take the Seahawks to win this one. I'm going to go 35-31 Seahawks win.
And I'm going to go a little bit less scoring. And maybe this is honestly wishful thinking for the Cardinals to move the ball well, but still in the end lose, right? I have the Seahawks winning 28-24 or 27-24. Where you see the Cardinals, or maybe, is that what the score I predicted? Yeah, I think that's what I'm going with for that one. Actually, I need to pull that up. Because I wrote, and because honestly, what I really, really want to happen is that the Cardinals lose. I don't want to play around with that stuff, as I want them to play well and then to unfortunately lose at the end. So I picked 27-24, I said, and I think they're going to regress just a little bit. They won't be able to do everything they did against the Eagles, and I think Seattle's going to lock it down a little bit more, especially when the playoffs are on the line, and it'll go back and forth ultimately. I don't know if it's a game-winning field goal that they get at the end or a late touchdown that Geno Smith, and it's the rather than Kyler having the ball last, it's the Seahawks, and they come away with a 27-24 win. That still should put you over the 50, gives you a 51 total. The Seahawks do cover that, at least the initial 2.5-point spread. It's looking like right now, what is that? What is the line right now? Is it 3?
Yeah, it's up to 3.
It's up to 3, so, you know, maybe if you're looking to bet the spread, take an alternate spread at Seahawks -2.5 and just take the slight instead of -3 at which is -105, lose a few bucks and take the -2.5 at -120 if you want to go that route. And then, I mean, the money line's not I mean, the money line's not terrible at minus 145 if you're not worried about the spread.
No, I don't think so at all. But, you know, this is going to be an interesting one because the Cardinals have found the blueprint, but it's a hard blueprint to replicate. And so for that reason, you know, I think that they can win this game, but I wouldn't, like we said, I wouldn't pick them to win. And that's what's tough about this situation.
So both predicting a Seahawks win, but both predicting the Cardinals will look good doing it. And with that, we'll wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Spirit podcast, best of Cardinals talk on the web. If I am not, because I have not heard from Tim yet, I haven't gotten a hold of anyone for another show. So maybe the next show that we will have will come next week when we start the off-season schedule, and then we'll have to look at how we're going to handle our off-season content. There's lots to talk about. That's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is episode 504. Thanks for listening, as always.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise up, Red Sea, be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.
Whoa!